Reinhardt Glass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. It is Wednesday, June 13th, 2012, and here we go with another hour talking about something that I think is really very important, food. And I know that so many of us out there feel so frustrated. We all want to live good lives. At least I think most of us do. And one of the most obvious places to start in making a difference is with what we eat every day. Food is connected to so many things. And so if we really want to make our lives meaningful and better and feel good spiritually, emotionally, physically, food is the best place to start. And one of the things that I find so crazy these days is that so many of us are always looking for the best deal when it comes to food. We want food that's cheap. And certainly food should be affordable and food should be accessible. But shouldn't we put value into having quality, nutritious food? There's a little food for thought. Meanwhile, I want to introduce my first guest, the absolutely wonderful, fabulous, compassionate, brilliant Dr. Will Tuttle. He's an award-winning speaker, educator, author, and musician. His music, writings, and presentations focus on creativity, intuition, and compassion. He presents between 100 and 150 events yearly at conferences, retreats, progressive churches, and centers throughout North America. A former Zen monk with a PhD in education from UC Berkeley, he has worked extensively in intuition development, spiritual healing, meditation, music, creativity, vegan living, and cultural evolution. Get ready to be inspired. Welcome to It's All About Food, Will.
Hi, Karen. Nice to be with you. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
It is. Thank you. So I haven't seen you in a few years, and I'm just wondering what's new, what's good going on in the world. You travel all over the place, and I want to hear some good news.
Right. Yeah, actually, Madeline and I are now in our 17th year living on the road in our solar-powered rolling home here. We're in Massachusetts at the moment, and we are doing still lots of events. I have a lecture here in Cape Cod tomorrow night promoting the vegan living. And I would say that the momentum is definitely building for veganism and for compassion and health, understanding the critical role of eating a plant-based diet and living lives that reflect what we yearn for, which is a world of kindness and compassion and freedom and equality and justice. And that as we give those qualities to animals and to other people, hungry people, and there's so many really that are harmed through our daily food choices and our product choices, that we are sowing the seeds of a new world, of a much better world. And I think the momentum is like exponentially increasing. I mean, there's
Absolutely. Definitely
a pushback. You know, I can feel this pushback from the industries and from just the long ingrained habits. But more and more people are really excited about the possibility of a plant-based diet. I get emails really a lot saying that people have read the World Peace Diet and gone vegan. Just got one today, and they. So I think, you know, more and more people are waking up. And that's the good news.
Well, The World Peace Diet is a fabulous book. You wrote it in 2005?
Right. It was 5 years. But, yeah, it was published at the end of 2005. And we're still actually, it seems to be nearly, I wrote it in the way not, you know, to be something that would be sort of an evergreen. I mean, it's not really dated, I don't think.
Oh, absolutely not.
So
I think it's a great handbook for humanity.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. And the main idea there is to understand that whatever we sow, we will eventually reap the consequences of our actions, and that our mistreatment of animals routinely for food, and especially for food, but for products and experimentation and everything else, has consequences that we are taught not to see. And so this is like this, essentially this hidden cultural program that is forced on all of us when we're born into this culture to see animals merely as things and to actually eat them, that's what really gets that way of seeing deeply into us. And so it's only when we are able to actually help each other, I think is really what it is, help each other to see this, you know, it's create communities and ways of bringing this understanding to each other, like you're doing with your radio program, to help people see that we've all been indoctrinated with a program in this, through the food rituals, which are the most powerful rituals in any culture, really are the meals, and that it's not in our best interest.
Now, you have a very interesting history and your path, lots of colorful experiences, lots of meditation. You were in Korea as a Zen Buddhist. You've taken long walks to Tennessee, where you went to the farm and became vegetarian. I mean, you've done a lot of searching and spiritual work. Does everyone need to do that?
I think, in a way, we all need to have our own unique journey, you know.
Because I could hear some people saying, oh, that's too much trouble.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a lot of trouble, but it was actually not trouble. It was really fun. But I think we all, you know, we all have our unique way of getting to wherever we're going. We have, in a sense, like the Beatles talked about, the long and winding road that will lead us eventually to the door. And I think, you know, we can speed up the process in a sense by cooperating with it. And I think the best way is to help each other. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was I can't really separate the inner work from the outer work. I think for me, it was really always about trying to quiet my mind and trust an inner knowing rather than trusting the cultural program, the all the voices in my head from my parents and the ministers and the teachers and the doctors and the lawyers and the media and the Walmart ads and, you know, everything, to separate that out and not have my life be propelled by those things and my goals be dictated by those things, and to connect with my own inner knowing. And I really think that veganism, vegan living, essentially has to be that. I mean, I think for us to be healthy and whole and complete and creative and to be participants in our society in a positive way, each one of us has a unique contribution to give that we will only be able to give as we are successful in connecting with the truth that is within us. So I think veganism comes to us naturally when we begin to do that. We mm-hmm. naturally begin to question this violence and the incredible wastefulness, the sheer, it's so irrational and unloving and ineffective to be confining and feeding animals and cutting down forests and destroying the oceans to feed animals fish meal so they can give more milk. And all these things are extremely ineffective and violent and cause disease and war. And I think as soon as anyone begins to connect, you know, basically with their inner wisdom and compassion, they will naturally begin to question these things. The difficulty is, though, that they go very deep, and even people on a spiritual path very often have difficulty questioning the deep program of food. It goes right back to right after we lose our mother's breast and we start eating and we have...
If we even had our mother's
breast. Yeah, if we ever get the breast. Right? Most people don't.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is the most important work and probably the greatest work, this internal work, listening to our voices and choosing the ones we want to hear, or at least scripting the ones we want to hear and erasing the ones that are meaningless. This is really important work, and it's very, very challenging. I think once we get to the point where we have shelter and food and we don't have to focus on survival, then this is the most important thing we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And it's all connected. And I think it's very important for us who have the means to have food and, you know, basic needs met, to take the next step and try to connect with the purpose of our lives. And when we do that, I think we'll begin to live in a more kind and compassionate way for ourselves and for others around us, and we'll be able to then create the same opportunity for others who are right now are just trying to get food in their mouths and can't. because of the inequality in the system.
And it's, it's so nutty because we've got, what, about a billion people who are starving and then a billion people who are obese, and it's...
Right. Right. We're growing plenty of food to feed everyone. Actually, they say more than twice as much as they could possibly eat. If people were actually eating a plant-based diet, we could feed the whole, could feed twice as many people as we have. So that's a wonderful, you know, every time I think about that and articulate that to groups, you know, the basic message is we live on a beautiful and abundant planet. There's no reason for anyone to be hungry. There's more than enough to go around for everyone. And it's simply a matter of not believing the official stories that are drummed into our heads over and over again that we need to eat meat to get enough protein, we need to eat dairy products to get enough calcium, that there's just not enough to go around, that there's always going to be people who are hungry and starving. They're all official stories that benefit perhaps a tiny minority of people. But for all of us who are actually living here and animals and future generations and so forth, they're absolutely counterproductive and they're not true.
Yep.
And it's being more and more understood. It's sort of people are looking behind the curtain, like in The Wizard of Oz.
That's funny you brought that up. We were just talking about that yesterday. The man behind,
right.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Yeah.
Right, right,
what,
exactly.
What we need to do is click our ruby slippers together three times and say,
right.
go vegan. Something
exactly.
like that.
Yeah, that's actually, I think that would probably do it. We all did that.
I'm looking at your schedule on your website, willtuttle.com/schedule.htm. And you're amazing. So you're all over the place. And I see that there's some consistency here where you speak at a lot of unity churches and
right.
Unitarian. And
right.
it always struck me as another part of the bizarre world that we live in, where religious groups, and I'm not someone who follows any religion, but where religious groups will promote, or say they do, kindness and compassion and thou shalt not kill, and yet they're not promoting, for the most part, a vegan message.
Yeah, I know. It's something that I'm actually faced with constantly over the last 20 years, because I pretty much every Sunday for the last 20 years, I've been going into very progressive churches where people are talking about the most progressive things, really, and yet there is this universal resistance to looking at the food choices. And even when they get together in conferences that are specifically for world peace and for social evolution, for cultural evolution, for cultural transformation, you know, all these things, and if I apply to these conferences and say I'd like to bring the message of compassion for animals and veganism, they turn me down. They say, no, we don't want to discuss that. We don't want to bring that into the equation. That's not important. But that's too divisive.
That complicates things.
That's complicated. We want to be able to eat our meat and dairy products and have peace and transformation. And don't realize that that's a recipe for disaster, really. Whatever we sow, we reap. So I see some help. I see some changes happening, and that's the good. That's great, I think. There are changes happening.
Yeah, I remember the Unitarian Church put out some sort of, I don't know what to call it, but a few years ago they came out and said all the churches should have this thing about sustainable food or something like that. And
it was actually ethical eating.
It was ethical eating.
The church. It was the actual denomination-wide, entire North America, all the ministries were focusing together on a study action issue. It's what they do every like 8 or 9 years, study action issue. So that they chose that at the big meetings. And again, though, it was interesting because I spoke at quite a few Unitarian churches during this time on ethical eating, and I still found that there was quite a bit of hemming and hawing about actually looking at it, our eating of animals for food. But I will have to say, to their credit, they did struggle with this, and they did create a statement, finally, that as a denomination, that our treatment of animals for food is something that has to be taken seriously. We should move toward more plant-based diets, essentially. So they did come up finally with that statement. So that was heartening to see. So I think, again, that's a sign of some of the progress that's being made.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you talk a lot to many, many, many people. And what seems to be the biggest concern with people or their biggest struggles these days?
Well, I think a lot of people, it's right now, of course, it's economic, the economy, and health. And so with Forks Over Knives and some of the other things coming out that are helping people to basically have better health and save money there, too, I think that's helping a lot of people move toward a more plant-based diet, and they can rationalize it and understand it in those terms. It's also great to see organizations releasing undercover video footage of the violence and atrocities committed routinely against animals in stockyards and factory farms and slaughterhouses. And I think that's getting more and more play, and people are eating less meat. I mean, that's one of the things that is undeniable, is that the per capita consumption of meat is really declining. The number of animals, land animals being killed, is declining, and in the United States anyway. And this is definitely seems to be increasing, and the number of vegetarians and vegans are increasing. I think, you know, those are things that we want to really work to keep the momentum going and keep the education going. And that's one of the reasons we do the lectures that we're doing. We have this online training for WPCI facilitators, and we're doing a thing called Vegan Palooza, which is in a couple of weeks in mid-July, which is we're going to be interviewing on the online. It's basically an online program. A lot of well-known people in the vegan movement, like Neil Bernard and John McDougall and Rory Friedman. And
where
Kathy
can we
Trump
find out about that?
Ollie. So, well, we're just setting it up, but it's Vegan Palooza. It's on my schedule. If you look down a little bit July 12th to 15th. And veganpalooza.com is the website where we just have it coming up right now. And but in the next week or so, it'll be, you know, it'll all be up there. We'll be sending emails out and letting people know. So I think you know, it's basically about getting information really to people so that they can understand, because we get so much misinformation and so much.
I want to underline that, you know, so much misinformation.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about something a little. I want to touch on meditation, because I know that's been an important part of your life, and I know you talk about it with people. Can you just give us a little idea of what it is and what you do?
Yeah, meditation.
And how important it is.
Right. To me, you know, even though in our culture it's considered sort of a marginal thing, typically in our culture, I believe that it's essential. It's part of our fundamental human heritage as human beings to be able to enter into states of consciousness where our mind is not dominated by the relentless thinking that goes on based on our conditioning. And so what meditation is simply bringing our mind into the present moment in a relaxed and present way, where we're not thinking about what we did in the past or the future, what's going to happen, you know, that kind of thing. We're not focusing our attention there, but rather being open and quiet and receptive. It's sort of this ultimate receptivity to me. It's being receptive and quiet. And it's essentially contacting what I refer to in the World Peace Diet as Sophia, the sacred feminine dimension within us. Whether we're men or women, I think we have this capacity to be receptive to a higher knowing, which is really our own true nature. And if we don't cultivate that, then we're simply, as I said earlier, being propelled through life by this programming. So meditation is really the daily practice of consciously letting go of the program, constantly letting go of this narrative that I've always got going, sort of running in the background of why I like this and why I don't like that and why I'm going to do this and why I'm going to do that and why they shouldn't have done that and why I wish they would have done this and you know, that whole story. Just letting it go and just connecting with being, not trying to change anybody, not trying to change ourselves, not trying to attain anything, just to experience being. And I think when we are able to do that, we'll realize that what we are right now in this moment is whole and complete and aware and is of the nature of eternal consciousness. We're manifesting through a physical vehicle, and we have a name and a form that we identify with. in many ways, that's a delusion that we're just that. And we're taught by our culture that we're just an object, just a thing that was born and will die. And through meditation, we can experience directly that what we are, in fact, is actually eternal consciousness manifesting through a vehicle in a physical body that may be in a certain age and weight and sex and so forth. But actually, we are the consciousness that makes this possible. And when we do that, we begin to see others as consciousness. And we begin to become, I think, a blessing in the world in the sense that we don't just limit people. We don't see other beings merely as pieces of meat. We see them as sacred manifestations of consciousness. And we begin to have some self-respect, and we begin to have more self-confidence because we realize that we're more than just this programmed object that's going to live a little while and then die, and therefore we have to try to get what we want and keep away what we don't want and in this constant struggle. That is really an enslaving mentality. It's a prison. And so the idea is to free ourselves from that prison. And the main way out, actually, it really is two things. One is consciousness, meditation, being aware. And the other is compassion, being kind and loving and actually seeing other beings as worthy of our kindness and respect.
This is the secret to life, folks. I really think so. And I think it's so unfortunate in our society that we don't meditate. And it's something that babies and children should be brought up with. That should be a normal part of life when we all have our moment to go within and be quiet and learn how to turn off all of that junk.
Right.
I know that meditation has really, it was one of the important factors in saving my own life and really focusing on my own intention and what I wanted. One thing was to live. And living, because I started meditation during a serious moment of crisis. But it's such a wonderful thing because it's free and it provides so much benefit. I would really love for all of us to be able to take a moment. We deserve it. And just be with ourselves. It and in so many intense, stressful moments when we think, oh, but I can always meditate. It really brings us calm and sometimes answers some questions that seem so overwhelming.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, if we're not meditating, we really don't even know who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it. We're kind of on automatic pilot, just being driven along by the forces of conditioning that have been just overwhelming us since we were born, really. So meditation to me is opening the door of consciousness and really opening the door of the prison and walking out and seeing life and myself from another perspective. And like you said, the benefits are many levels. I mean, there's a lot of research showing that meditation helps us physically. We have lower blood pressure and just more physical harmony. It helps us psychologically. There's a lot of studies that show that it helps with stress and anxiety and depression and those kinds of things. And then I think it's also important to realize that it helps us on a spiritual level as well. And I think also ethically we begin to connect with this inner sense of being part of something greater. And so we begin to become more kind and loving in our relationships with others, more harmonious. We begin to see their perspective, not just our own in a certain sense. And so I think culturally it's very helpful. I think actually it would really help our entire culture if more people took time to meditate. And I think that it's not something that's religious in the sense you don't have to belong to any particular religion. It's more just a human activity. And I don't think it's just human. I think animals also meditate. I think that's one of the reasons they're in some ways a lot more harmonious and connected to their purpose because I love watching animals, birds and wild animals in general. To me, when I see them, they're very much in the present moment and conscious and aware and fulfilling something that I think we could learn a lot about ourselves if we pay attention to animals.
Absolutely. One of the things I like to do when I look at any animal is to look in their eyes, and there's so much in their eyes, and I like to have that communication saying, I don't eat you.
Exactly. Right. I respect you and your
right.
faith here.
You are not food.
Yeah.
You are someone.
Right. And animals are intuitive. I think they
know.
Very often they really pick
Absolutely.
Up on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So have right. you ever led a meditation with like a gazillion people?
Well, actually, I've led retreats where people will come and will do a meditation retreat for you
okay,
know.
Okay, so here's something I want to see you do if you ever get motivated to do it. But some sort of world peace diet meditation where we all at some designated time for 10 minutes or something do something all together everywhere led by you.
All right, well, that's a great idea. I think it's a, we have something that's approaching that, but it's we have. If anyone's interested, you know, we have a website called CircleOfCompassion.org, and there's the worldwide prayer circle for animals, and every day at noon, there are actually hundreds of people all over the world that have signed up and put themselves on the world map, and every day at noon, wherever we are, we all join together. In prayer, basically in affirmative prayer, meditation for animals, seeing animals as part of, basically the actual thing we say is compassion encircles the earth for all living beings everywhere. That's the basic formula in a sense. But the idea is to just feel and see the energy of compassion encircling and embracing all living beings everywhere. And we just join in that at noon. We thought that's the easiest thing if we all do it at noon. So, of course, so it's kind of a rolling, it rolls across the time zones kind of a thing. But we could also do something on a larger scale.
Where do we find that? What's the website?
The website is circleofcompassion.org.
Okay.
You just go there and it says join us, and then there's a place you can find out, but it's right there. It's very, very, it's very much available, and we'd love to have.
Okay, well, now I know what I'm doing at noon tomorrow.
Right. yeah. It's a nice rhythm in our life. Every day at noon, we just pause for a few minutes and just connect with others. Yeah.
Very good. Well, we have just a couple of minutes left, Will. What do you want to share with us in these last few wonderful, loving, peaceful moments?
I see. Yeah. Well, I just really basically want to thank you, of course, Karen, for just keeping the flame burning and so beautifully. And I want to thank also everyone who's listening for the efforts that I know you're making. And I think it's important for us really to remember that no effort that we make is ever lost when we do something to try to spread this message or to live this message. Because what veganism is, essentially, it's nothing to be proud of. It's not being special or different or anything. It's just simply coming home to our own true nature, coming home to our own hearts and looking out with eyes that when we see beings rather than seeing things. So it's just simply, in a sense, coming back home. And I think every time we make an effort to bring this message to others, even they, it may seem that they are rejecting it or they didn't like it or they didn't hear it, to know that we did plant a seed, to not be attached to the fruits of our actions, but just plant the seeds as best we can, and that in the fullness of time, all the seeds that we're planting will bear fruit. And so the whole idea is really, I think, to adopt this mentality of radical inclusion. That's really what veganism is, to include all beings in the sphere of our kindness and compassion and do the best we can to find our unique way to bring this message to others, however that is, through art, music, education, writing, whatever. And then I think as we do that, for the few years that we have on this beautiful earth, we'll be living our lives with purpose and meaning. And I don't think there's anything more important anyone can do than to help spread this message of the vegan message of compassion and kindness for all life.
Radical inclusion.
Right.
Okay,
radical
I like inclusion. That. Thank you so much. Everyone, read The World Peace Diet if you haven't, and if you have, read it again.
Great.
Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. And
thanks
the best
so
to you on your journey.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Be
again.
Well.
Yep.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a quick break and then be back with another very lovely individual, Victoria Moran. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Okay, this is the second portion of our June 13th, 2012 show. And I just wanted to remind you, of course, that I'm the founder of the nonprofit Responsible Eating and Living. And please visit, when you have a chance, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Because if you can't find enough inspiration for healthy food, I know that you'll find a lot of good things there. Oh, I'm hitting things, and that's not a good thing. Okay, my next guest, Victoria Moran, is the author of 11 books and is also an inspirational speaker, monologist, and certified holistic health counselor. She is the founder of Main Street Vegan Academy, training vegan lifestyle coaches. Her latest book, Main Street Vegan, Everything You Need to Know to Eat Healthfully and Live Compassionately in the Real World, written with the able assistance of her daughter, Adair Moran, an actor, playwright, stunt performer, and lifelong vegan. Among Victoria's other titles are the best-selling Creating a Charmed Life, now in 30 languages, and the plant-based weight loss classic, The Love Power Diet, Eating for Freedom, Health, and Joy. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Thanks so much.
Whew. Okay, Main Street Vegan. It's about time. We are Main Street. We're no longer the brown rice hippie, what the hell is it kind of person.
Yes, very exciting. We are on Main Street. There's a little bit of danger, I think, in it overshooting Main Street and thinking that we've gone from brown rice hippie to super mogul movie star celebrity. We need to kind of bring it together and see that this is for anybody and everybody who wants to do it.
It's always very exciting. I know all the vegans get all crazy when we hear about another celebrity that's gone vegan. And then some might say, sure, well, they have a personal chef and it's easy for them to do it. But the point is, vegan is for everyone,
and it's simple and it's easy. There's a myth that's grown up, I think, because of both the celebrities and because we have all of these vegan junk foods, a lot of processed food that's kind of expensive. I'm being asked as I tour with Main Street Vegan, interviewers will say, but isn't that expensive? And I always do a double take, because always it used to be, well, I wouldn't want to do it, but I guess you save money.
Yeah, right.
Like, yes, you do save money. Beans and rice feed the world.
Well, I was just thinking at the beginning of the show, number one, that we don't put enough value on food. And people want food to be cheap. And to the point where they'll go to restaurants and fast food establishments to get a deal. And a lot of times the food is very low quality and poorly grown and poorly made and with lots of ingredients that aren't healthful. And how did we get to this place where we just want to feel full for the littlest price imaginable without even thinking about what's good for us?
It's a very complicated issue, because obviously there are some people who are on very, very limited budgets. They have lots of children. They need to get enough calories into their kids to go from one day to the next. And the way society is now, people have forgotten about beans and rice and apples in the bag that you have to cut the bruises off of. And simple, simple food, that is just as cheap as going for the dollar meal at McDonald's. It just doesn't look like it at first glance.
Yeah, and we know all over the world, the poorest people have survived and thrived on beans and rice. Or let's just say the gazillion types of beans and whole grains, because it's not just rice. It depends on where you are. It could be millet. It could be quinoa. It could be, there's just so many of them.
Sure.
Teff.
Well, I think that the myth that has to be overcome is the idea that somehow, some way, we need the meat. We need the animal products. I was watching a documentary this morning on the treadmill. I just feel that the iPad is the greatest invention. It is giving me so much information as I watch documentaries and making me fitter. But this one was called Frankensteer. It's a Canadian documentary about feedlot cattle. Did not come from a vegetarian or vegan perspective, but was really showing all the problems, both for consumers and certainly for the cows. And yet I kept thinking as I watched it, why don't we just say, gosh, this is bad, let's stop. But instead the responses were, well, there's the grass-fed organic kind of beef, and then there's all this legislation and regulation and all these things we need to do to make things better. And I understand not everybody is going to go veg tomorrow, but for those of us who can just get it, you know what? A really great way to deal with these problems is just don't consume the stuff. Be free.
I hear you. I know that's the simplest way to do it, and it really isn't hard. So one of the things that I like about your book, there are more and more books on the market today about how to go vegan, why you should go vegan, all the different reasons, different points of view. There's lots of different people in the world. We're all coming from different places. And there's more and more books that are suitable for more and more people. What's great about this is it's very friendly and gentle and easy. It's not in your face. And you come out and tell some of the hard stuff, but at the same time, it's all very gentle.
I think that's because that's how I am. And people say to me, you write the way you talk. I don't know how to write any other way. 11 books, I still write the way I talk. I think that it is necessary to be gentle because we all have a different trajectory and we all make change in different ways. It was very, very hard for me. I went vegetarian at 19 and I was 32 before I fully committed to being vegan. Mm-hmm. And that was because I was a food addict, a practicing food addict. I was a binge eater, and it was impossible at that time to be a binge eating vegan. You could do it now, but it would still be inconvenient because you'd have to go to the health food store to get your stuff to binge
on. And expensive.
But at that time, you know, I just needed to stop in at the gas station and get my fix, and it was not possible for me to be vegan. So I needed to take care of those issues first, and then I was able to do this thing that I'd wanted to do for a long time, which was get rid of all the animal products. And I didn't know at that time that there are two halves to this deal from the dietary point of view. One is you stop eating animal products. The other is you pile on the vegetables. You pile on the color. Today I tell people your plate ought to look like a Christmas tree, mostly green with splashes of other bright colors, because that's how we get the phytochemicals and the antioxidants and all this great vitality-boosting stuff. And people will say to me sometimes, but what exactly is it? Well, I know that there are all sorts of medical nutritional elements, and that we have wonderful medical doctors and dietitians in our movement who can give you the whole chemical, who's it's, what's it. But for me as a consumer and a mom and a human being out there in the world, it is life force energy. It is feeling like $1 million every day, which today I do, and 40 years ago I didn't. Mm. That is counterintuitive. It's not supposed to get better, but it can.
There's a lot of talk shows, a lot of information where people bring up different things about diet. And on news programs, we might hear a 5-second soundbite, maybe a little more, about the latest and greatest of something or some vitamin we need. And it gets really confusing. It gets really overwhelming. And all that information might be interesting. It might be useful to some extent. But for most of us, we don't need to be dietitians. We don't need to be nutritionists. And we don't need to know where we get our protein or carbohydrate or fat or phytochemicals or vitamin D or omega-3 fatty acids. All we need to do is eat whole, fresh plant foods. It's so simple.
And that takes care of the vast majority of things that are going on. I do have one chapter in Main Street Vegan about supplements, and it's just called Supplement Vitamin B12, because that is one nutrient not reliably found in the plant kingdom.
And although, we all need it, not just vegans and vegetarians.
This is true. The National Institutes of Health is now saying that anybody over 50 needs to supplement B12 because it's so hard to get from the animal foods. I think anybody who lives in a northern climate and avoids the sun for reasons of cancer prevention and or vanity, or anyone with dark skin who doesn't have the ability to make as much vitamin D from sun exposure probably needs to get their vitamin D levels checked and may need to supplement that. And I also supplement the omega-3 with an algae-based EPA DHA supplement, and that is it. Mm-hmm. I do not want to spend my life standing at the kitchen counter taking pills.
Right, counting them out, putting them in little boxes, traveling with them, which is really challenging. When you travel, it's hard enough to bring the basics that you need these days on an airplane.
Oh, that's for sure.
Vitamins.
Yesterday, I went to Chicago on a 7 a.m. flight to do a TV show at 12:45 and came back that afternoon. They wanted me to do two recipes. One required a food processor. Have you ever tried to pack a food processor? plus a lot of groceries. It was the most awful packing job. And then I got there. But here's the cool part. I show up. There's this lovely interviewer. His name was Steve. And he just came up to do the interview and said, oh, I've been eating this way for 8 months because I watch Forks Over Knives. Now I eat this way, too. And he got so involved in talking to me, we ended up not even doing the recipe with the food processor.
That's funny.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, you just meet vegans all over everywhere these days.
Yeah. I just wanted to say I have traveled. I mean, this is kind of a strange little thing, but when I was going through my cancer treatment, I did chemotherapy outside of Chicago, and I would fly there either for the day or overnight, and I traveled with a juicer because I was really committed to my juicing.
Absolutely.
So, and it is, I mean, it's crazy, but, you know, sometimes we have to do these things.
This is true, and juicing is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I love juicing. My juicing chapter in the book, as I talk about all these chapters, they're short chapters. I'm kind of known for little essays.
But you cover everything.
Thank you.
It's all there.
Yeah. Well, the juicing chapter is called Joyfully Juice, because that's the point. It's not like, oh, my God, I've got to make this juice and hold my nose and gag it down. No, no, no. You want to make beautiful, yummy, delicious, delightful juice because it's really like an infusion of youthfulness and energy.
And we deserve it. We deserve to buy the vegetables. We deserve to juice the vegetables. We deserve to drink them. And we deserve to clean it up with joy.
Amen.
We deserve it. It's all just like a shift in the way we think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very exciting to see how it's happening. When I flew to L.A. on the beginning of my book tour, I was wearing my button that said, I'm a Main Street vegan. And I was on the aisle seat, and there's this woman by the window, and she leans over the poor man in the middle and says, tell me about your button. And I told her, and she said, well, I've been vegan for 40 years.
Whoa.
And I thought, that's not possible because you look 41. She said, no, I'm back from my 41st college reunion. I now eat 90% raw food. I work out 2 hours a day. Mm. I'm gluten-free. And she looked sensational. Now, I do think that the guy in the middle thought, if these two women don't shut up talking about kale, I am going to ask to be moved. But it's just thrilling that you run into people everywhere. This is starting to take hold.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's a good thing. So you've got 11 books now, so you've seen the change because you've been writing about this and related subjects for... When did your first book come out?
Well, my first book was also about veganism, and I actually believe, as far as I can tell, and I've done quite a bit of research on this, that my book, which actually was a college thesis, I had a fellowship to do foreign study, and I opted to study vegans in England, or England, Scotland, and Ireland, because it's a smaller landmass, and they were easier to find then in this country. They were all spread apart, what few vegans there were. So that book was published by a British publisher called Thorsons in 1980. I believe it is the first book about vegan philosophy and practice ever to come from a regular publisher. There were books about natural hygiene and raw foods and things like that, but the whole ethical part of veganism and the health as well. So, yeah, that book, I think, sold as many copies in its entire life before it went out of print as Main Street Vegan sold in its first week.
Oh.
There's a lot more interest these days.
Well, that's good, and that's good for you. So tell me about Main Street Academy.
Ah, thank you for asking.
Yeah.
I am so excited. We are about to start our first course. Main Street Vegan Academy trains and certifies vegan lifestyle coaches. I am so thrilled that we fill to capacity and then let a couple of other people in because they wanted to come so much, and we're now signing people up for November. A vegan lifestyle coach is someone who helps other people along this path, whether it's an ongoing coaching kind of situation, whether it's a one-time, okay, I'm going vegan and these are the questions that I need answered, whether it's going on shows like this or putting up a podcast or blogging or speaking to a group. We train people in the basics of what they need to know and how they can express it so that people are not offended, so that people are well-educated, accepted where they are, and able to go forward. I think it's so exciting.
It is. And how do they get certified?
They come to a 5-day intensive program in New York City. And people said to me when I was first developing this, oh, you ought to put it online and it ought to be this and that. And I said, no, if you want to go to Harvard, you will go to Cambridge. If you want to be a vegan lifestyle coach, you will figure out a way to come to New York for 5 days. And people are doing it. People are coming from Texas, Missouri, Oregon for this. And some are staying in hotels and some are staying with relatives. And one person found a monastery retreat house in Chelsea. And they're just making it work.
Wow.
And we're doing fabulous field trips because New York City is vegan heaven.
It is.
So we're going to the Vogue Couture Boutique, beautiful vegan outerwear, Mushu's, a vegan shoe store. We're going to a cleansing center in the East Village and learning about raw foods and colonics and that sorts of things. And, of course, lots of restaurants. So it's going to be fun
as
well as instructive.
It's going to be very fun. How many people are in the group?
14 this time, and we hope to grow and grow and grow.
Right. Well, you know, I agree with you. I think it's important to do it in person. Just for lots of reasons, people will commit more. But, you know, part of this, you do know this, but part of this is eating this way, connecting with others. It's about community. It's about caring about everyone else. And sure, there's a lot we can learn online, and I learn every day online, but we can't stop being with each other.
Right. And it's tactile as well. I mean, we'll have Fran Costigan coming in to do some cooking classes. She's a wonderful vegan baker and chef. We'll have other people coming with their PowerPoint presentations that they want to talk about and expound on. So it's going to be great. I just really encourage anybody who's interested to go to mainstreetvegan.net, click on Academy, and see if it looks like it's for you.
I like it. And I like that there are so many people that are interested.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And different people. I think that part of it is that a lot of people want so much to help. I mean, the reason I wrote this book was I went to a PETA fundraiser one night and all I wanted to do was write them a great big check, so big that it would bounce, and I couldn't do that. So I was just like, what can I do? What can I do? And it really came to me, Main Street Vegan. You need to write a book that's for those people out there in America and around the world who were like you were 30 years ago. You wanted to do this, but it just seemed so hard. It seemed so weird. It seemed so different. So that's what I'm doing, writing the book, and that's what the vegan coaches will be able to do once they've had the training.
Well, the good thing is it's like a snowball, and we started out as a flake, and now, you know, we're rolling. We're really rolling, and
oh,
the ball's getting bigger.
May I quote you?
I just came to me. And we don't want to melt. But maybe we can melt when everything, you know, when the job's done.
I think it's very important that we stay kind to one another, that we stay connected, and that we not let anything interfere with what we've built up already. You know, I understand that there are some different opinions about different things. There are opinions about oils and opinions about how much cooked food and how much raw food and opinions. Now there's this federal egg legislation that people have very strong feelings on both sides. And I think it's just so important that even within the vegan world that we all stay friends because we're not big enough to have little offshoot groups and be enemies.
Yeah, unfortunately, in every group, and I've seen it in this group, there's competition, there's jealousy, there's a lot of stuff that's very human. And we don't need that. We need to focus on getting rid of factory farming because it's like probably the worst thing that humanity has ever come up with ever. And, you know, if you want to eat oil or you don't, okay, that's such a small speck. Let's get rid of the exploitation. And then when everybody's eating a healthier diet, then we can focus on fine-tuning.
Exactly. And by then we'll know more and maybe there won't even be any conflicts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's see. We have a few minutes left. Let's jump into the book a little bit. There's just so many different things here. So we talk about nutrition, and you have great recipes all through the book going with the theme.
I
of
was
the, chapter.
Yeah, I was inspired by the culinary novel. Have you read those where it's a novel, it's a story, but at strategic places throughout the book, they just happen to throw in a recipe. So in Main Street Vegan, there's a recipe after each chapter that has something to do with the chapter. A few of them, Adair, my daughter, and I came up with. A lot of them have been donated by these fabulous chefs and cookbook authors. So, for example, a fashion designer gave us the recipe that follows the fashion chapter, mm-hmm. and the cosmetic chapter is followed by Chef John's spa smoothie. So it's really fun. And, of course, the money-saving chapter gets cheapish chili, my husband's favorite cheap chili.
Well, my favorite part about this whole thing, the whole vegan thing, is the food. Because the food is fabulous. The food is delicious. There's an infinite variety of everything we can eat, and we can eat without guilt. That is, if we're staying away from all of the modern-day vegan junk food that's out there. But this healthy Christmas tree diet of mostly green food smattering with colors.
Well, maybe you've just named my next book.
The Christmas tree diet, yeah. I like that. Yeah, and you can include the snowball in there.
That's right. That's right. Today, I sliced a cantaloupe in half. And just the smell and the flavor of the first bite, it's absolutely exquisite. And I think what happens, and certainly I know that this was what happened to me when I was a practicing binge eater, the taste buds get jaded, mm-hmm. and the idea of a piece of fruit is just like, what is this thing? You know, this is not a sweet, this is not a treat. But after a while, when you start eating more natural foods, oh, they just get to be so magnificent. And then you discover the weird ones, you know, like durian.
That's not for me. I don't know if you like it.
My daughter hates it. I think it's fabulous.
Yeah.
I think it tastes like cheesecake.
I was on an all-raw diet for 2 years, and I couldn't go there. And it seemed like I was going to be kicked out of the club because I wasn't a lover of durian.
But that's the thing. We can't afford to have any clubs. You know, there's a great big club, and that is of people who care enough about ourselves to want to be alive and vital and vibrant, and who care enough about these creatures. Oh, my gosh, these animals. I heard you talking mm-hmm. with Will Tuttle. To look in the eyes of these beings, there's just nothing like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are just too many stories. And you mentioned one about with your husband.
Oh, yes, yes. We went to the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary a few years ago, and we'd had a tragedy in our family. We'd lost a very, very young son, my husband's son. And we just thought maybe going to the country would make everybody feel better. It didn't. We got there. William was so depressed. I thought I'd just walk around and, you know, we'd go back to Manhattan. But he ultimately got out of the car and was just kind of leaning on a fence. And this steer, huge steer, who hadn't had any interest in being with people before, walked up to William and put his head on William's shoulder and just leaned it there for the longest time, as if to say, I know you're suffering, I have too, and I'm going to stand here till you feel better. It was the most remarkable experience, and nobody who saw it, and certainly not William who experienced it, would say that it was anything other than empathy, mm-hmm. empathy and caring.
Yeah, I'm getting all teary just hearing it again after I read it. There are so many of those stories, and so many of them we're missing out on because we have this disconnect with everyone we share this planet with, not just the humans. Okay, I think we have a minute? 1 minute. We have 1 minute. What are we going to do in this 1 minute, this one delicious moment? I did want to mention that the linden tree by my terrace just bloomed today. And are you familiar with that intoxicating fragrance? It is the most incredible smell. And the thing is, it only lasts for a week if you're lucky. And it just started out a wonderful morning. And I recently learned that the linden tree flowers, actually, you can make tea out of and do all kinds of benefits. So there's all kinds of wonderful things out there. Get Main Street Vegan. And thank you, Victoria.
Thank you, Karen.
I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a very delicious week.